to see more of in the United States.
Drop us a line, podcast@radiosurvivor.com. If you give us permission, we'll certainly read your comment or excerpts on the show.
Maybe
on
we
the
will
air.
Do an entire episode
from Caro, and you're listening to WGXC Acre 90.7 FM Hands-On Radio.
WGXC always needs computer donations. If you have an old one you don't need, and it is either a Macintosh 2011 or newer, 2.0 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, or Windows 2012 or newer, 2.4 gigahertz or faster CPU, dual core or more, email info@wgxc.org for more information.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Phoebes of Gilboa, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Tom Rowe with the WGXC News Update. Go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Amelia Teasdale reports in the Columbia paper that Matthew Nelson was elected board president and John Antalek vice president, with new board member Elizabeth Phillips and interim superintendent Lee Bordick sworn in at the July 9th Ichabod Crane School Board organizational meeting. Board member Jeffrey Alouette was the only vote against Nelson, and Antalek was elected without opposition. Nelson is also the chair of the Town of Kinderhook Democratic Committee, and Alouette alleges that the Town of Kinderhook Democrats' Facebook page reported misinformation about him and his family. Quote, "I did graduate from the district," unquote, Alouette said, refuting a Facebook post which has since been taken down. He has also said his daughter attended the school district until eighth grade, but admitted she did attend a private school for high school, calling that a, quote, "personal decision," unquote. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. Mallory Monk reports in the Albany Times-Union that a local immigrant advocate group is preparing for nationwide arrest July 14th from the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office. On July 11th, the New York Times reported that ICE officials would target at least 2,000 undocumented immigrants with deportation orders beginning July 14th. Last month, President Donald Trump promised other raids that never occurred. Quote, "Our community has faced increased and more aggressive immigration enforcement activities since the beginning of the Trump administration, and our community has responded with resilience," unquote, said Brian McCormick, director of the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. Quote, "Our organization will continue to expand our Know Your Rights and Rapid Response and organizing program to support and defend our community," unquote. McCormick has been training others locally to find out whether ICE officers have just an administrative warrant signed by an ICE official or a more powerful judicial warrant signed by a judge. The administrative warrant does not allow ICE officials to enter private property. Columbia County Sanctuary Movement members have a rapid response team that uses a mass text system, assesses how any arrest is conducted, supports the affected family, and locates the individual detained to connect them with legal services. Quote, "Although terrifying, it was a positive effect on our motivation to organize Know Your Rights trainings to access this information," McCormick said. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that New York's property tax levy increases will remain at the rate of inflation or 2% or less for the 2020 fiscal year, whichever is lower. Comptroller Tom DiNapoli's office made the announcement July 11th, Quote, the allowable levy growth will be 2% for the second year in a row. However, mixed economic signals may require local governments to respond to changing financial conditions, unquote, DiNapoli said in a statement. Quote, local officials should remain vigilant when crafting their budgets, unquote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Joseph Spector reports at the Poughkeepsie Journal that the Public Service Commission finalized a settlement with Charter Spectrum July 11th, allowing the cable and broadband company to continue working in New York. The State Public Service Commission voted 3-1 for the deal in April, which was approved again July 11th. Quote, with the 2019 settlement agreement and today's order, from my perspective, the public interests of New Yorkers are in a materially better place today than where things stood a year ago, unquote, Public Service Commission Acting General Counsel John Sippos told commission members. Last year, New York threatened to kick Charter out of New York if it didn't improve its broadband services, particularly in rural and underprivileged parts of upstate New York, as promised. Now the company has more promises, including doubling its investment in upstate New York, which in 2016 was estimated at $305 million. That projects broadband services to an additional 145,000 residences and businesses in upstate New York by September 30th, 2021, and then Charter will spend $12 million more for an additional 45,000 upstate addresses. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal. This has been Tom Rowe for the WGXC Local News. Go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you heard here.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts Sunday should be sunny with a high of 79 and a low around 57. Monday should also be sunny with a high around 80, a low around 61. Tuesday, there's a 20% chance of showers or thunderstorms. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny with a high of 82 and a low around 67. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm a student at Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
And I'm Sam. I am a graduate of Hudson High School, and I'm also from Hudson.
Ooh.
Yay. And Amelia and I are here every week talking about books.
Books we love, books we hate.
Other bookish things, mm-hmm. All that good stuff. And we're so pleased this week to be joined by Sam J. Miller, a local author.
It's my pleasure to be here.
We're so excited to talk about your new book in particular.
Awesome.
Which is very exciting. It just came out on Tuesday, July
2nd.
It's called Destroy All Monsters, and it's your second YA novel.
Yep.
The first was The Art of Starving.
Yes.
Which was fantastic and
Thank
won you.
You
the Nebula Award for...
For Best Young Adult Science Fiction. No big deal.
No big deal. I was super excited about this aspect of the Nebula Awards, aside from the fact that you won, which was really the reason I was watching in the first place. But can you tell everyone who the host of the Nebulas was that year?
Oh, it was Telly.
It was Telly Monster from Sesame Street.
I got to meet Telly. I mean, technically it was the human being who operates the puppet that Telly is, but...
But Telly was there,
Telly
too.
Telly was there. Ooh. Telly, I got... My husband and I got to take pictures with Telly afterwards, which, you know, my husband is an immigrant from the Dominican Republic, and when he came here at the age of 9, Sesame Street was an important part of his learning English, so it was very emotional. I mean, it was, of course, emotionally meaningful to
for
me, too, to see Telly, but for him it was especially... magical moment. So Telly, you know, they tell you don't meet your heroes, but Telly's a pretty cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you meet somebody who you admire and they have an attitude, but
Telly monster.
Telly's pretty chill.
Nice. Telly's a humble monster.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was very exciting that your book won that wonderful award. And then I know you were up for a Nebula this year as well for Blackfish City.
Didn't win. That's okay. I've been.
I mean, they can't give it to you every year.
No, they can't.
It's
fair. I've been nominated 5 times, which is a beautiful thing, but I've only won once. So, you know, I'll take it. Mm-hmm. I'll take a win. I'll take one.
Nomination,
I'll take none. Yeah, it's awesome. It's all good.
Yeah, so that's exciting. And you've won other awards as well for your work. And Destroy All Monsters, your latest, is also fantastic. I started reading it this past weekend. And haven't finished it yet, but have been listening to it every free moment
I
have.
It sounds like you're pretty close.
I'm pretty close. I have 2 hours left in the audiobook and probably around, I don't know, 30 or 40 pages in the book. So,
well, thank you for reading.
Yeah, it's great. And the audiobook, Sam hasn't listened to it because he doesn't like listening to his recordings.
No, I can't. Somebody did a recording of one of my short stories, mm-hmm. and I started, and then I realized, oh, no, I can't do this at all. This makes me deeply uncomfortable for reasons that I can't fully explain, except that it sounds like someone is reading my thoughts, mm-hmm. Like someone is in my head. Because when you're writing, it's a pretty solitary act. It's just you and the page. And then it goes out into the world, and that's cool, but you don't really have to deal with it. But then when some other human being is reading it out loud, it becomes a little eerie. As far as I can tell, I'm the only person who really has this problem. I've talked to a lot of other writers who are just fine with listening to audiobooks of their own stuff. So that's just my damage.
Well, so far, I think I've listened to all three of your novels, at least in part. I often go back and forth between the audio and the physical book. And I think I know I definitely did for Art of Starving and for this one. Awesome. But I think I did for Blackfish City as well. And they were all very good.
What a wonderful future this is, where we can listen to books and then pick them up and read them in hardcover.
Yeah.
And just seamlessly go back and forth between the two of them.
Yeah. I still have to find my spot. Yeah. But
oh, I see.
Often I'll listen throughout the day, and then when I go to bed at night and I want to read the physical book, I have to just find my spot.
Got it.
Yeah. But yeah, so you lucked out at least that even though you can't hear it yourself, it sounds great.
Awesome.
And Destroy All Monsters, I'm going to have you tell us a little bit about it, but it's from the perspective of two characters, and yep. so there's two readers on the audio, yep. which is also amazing. Fun.
Makes me feel extra classy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Destroy All Monsters is two stories. One is like a gritty contemporary YA about a teenage girl named Ash in the real world who goes to a high school with bullies and hate crimes and is worried about her best friend Solomon, who's having a serious mental health crisis, and she's trying to get him help. But it's also a fantasy story about a boy named Solomon who lives in a city full of dinosaurs and magic, who is very worried about his best friend named Ash, who is the refugee princess, and she is the target of a vast evil conspiracy, and he's trying to save her. And as these two versions of Ash and Solomon try to save each other in these two separate storylines, they start to fold in on each other and collapse into one story.
Ooh. Yeah.
We'll see. It sounds good, but whether I pull it off on the page, I don't really know. Mm-hmm. It's not really for me to say. But
I've noticed you have I don't know if fascination is the right word, or interest or affinity for dinosaurs.
I do love
dinosaurs.
And some
of the art that you do in one of your tattoos.
I do have I get a tattoo for every novel, yeah. And so the Destroy All Monsters tattoo is a Allosaurus with a quote, which is completely unrelated to the book, except thematically. The quote is, "Our lives are not our own," which is from Cloud Atlas, one of my favorite books/movies. And I thought it got to the sort of like special thing where we depend on each other, and our friends and family and chosen family are the people that our lives are inextricably bound up with theirs, plus a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And I have there's an amazing tattoo artist in New York City called Bradley Silver at White Rabbit Tattoos, and he does all my tattoos, and he's a genius. So plug for Bradley, if anybody listening is looking for new ink, Bradley Silver at White Rabbit is amazing.
Very nice.
That's cool, like to get a new tattoo for every book. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. I regret the rule now. Like, I made up that rule before I had any tattoos, and then I got them, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. I want to get a tattoo every day, because tattoos are really fun and cool. But now
I
have this rule, and my husband, who does not want me to get a tattoo every day, is holding me to the rule. So, yes, it's a cool rule. Knock on wood, so far I've been able to get several tattoos, and hopefully I'll be able to get more tattoos as a result of selling more books.
That'd be cool.
You'll just have to start writing stories about miniature worlds so they can get smaller. Definitely,
I have like two more full-size large tattoos, and after that, the tattoo for each book is going to have to get smaller. I'm very vain, and so I won't get tattoos in places no one will see because I want them to see because they're amazing. So, you know, the amount of skin that people will ever actually see is relatively small. I'm working with a pretty small canvas, and I won't get any on my neck. Or at least that's what I say now. Who knows? Who knows what I'll say a year from now? Often I'll make my rules for myself that will eventually cease to be useful.
So, it's like trying to set a budget at the book fair.
It's very difficult.
It's impossible. Exactly. It's folly. It's rank folly. It's good to have the intention, and it's also good to say, F it, I'm going to get a lot of books.
Yeah. So I'm curious, because Destroy All Monsters, you have these two main characters and two different worlds. And in Blackfish City, you had mostly one shared world, but different parts of that world and many different characters that you hopped around to. In terms of writing the story out, do you skip around a lot, or how much do you focus on one element of the story and then figure out how they merge together versus writing sort of linearly through the story?
I tend to write pretty linearly. If stuff gets shuffled around, it's usually after the fact of when I realize that things need to be changed, or in the editing process, if my editor says, I don't know why this character is doing this, so I'll need to go back and make their actions make more sense. So in writing, there's like two schools of thought. People who outline and people who don't. Mm-hmm. They call it pantsing, like flying by the seat of your pants. You either write a detailed outline or you pants it. And I'm sort of both. So I tend to have a very rough outline of like, I know this is eventually what's going to happen, but let me just start writing and figure out who these characters are and let them surprise me and let them figure it out for me. It gets a little all over the place. So I guess the answer is I got no idea. It's just a mess.
Well, it works out in the end. So that's
good. Hope so. I hope so.
And this is also your second book that's set in a sort of fictionalized Hudson, like sort of different alternate universe.
Yes.
Made up Hudson. What's that like writing about your childhood home, it's still your hometown, even though you don't live here currently, but your mom still.
Yeah, it's really weird. I mean, part of it is like, I live in New York City now. I've lived there for almost 20 years. I really love it. I love the city, but I wasn't a young person here. So being a young person in a big city versus a small town is really different. Mm-hmm. And so I can't imagine how it would have changed me growing up in a big city. So especially for young adult stuff, it's hard for me to imagine the real world, but not Hudson. Mm-hmm. and also, a lot of times writers are trying to heal their own wounds or make sense of difficult experiences they've had. So a lot of times the stuff that I'm writing about teenagers is informed by my own difficult adolescence. So again, that's so heavily imprinted by the space that you're in. So yeah, I think that it's a fascinating place. And I hated it growing up and I couldn't wait to get out. And then when I got out, I was like, oh, this place is pretty cool to visit.
Yeah.
It's like James Joyce, who hated Dublin and got out of Dublin as soon as he could, but then spent his entire life writing about Dublin from Paris or Switzerland. So not to compare myself to James Joyce, but I get it now. I get why he moved out, but then couldn't move on.
Mm-hmm. Because you now have two young adult novels and one adult novel published, as well as short stories. When you set out to write a story, do you know what audience you're writing for? Or does that happen more at the publisher or agent level? Do you know when you're done?
It tends to take shape over time very slowly and, again, messily. Like, I don't really have a system. Stuff just happens. But often I will have an idea that will be sort of kicking around in my head for a really long time. Like with Destroy All Monsters, I knew that I wanted to write a story that was set in these two worlds, like a fantasy world and the real world, and that goes back and forth, and that the two worlds are connected. And that's been something I've wanted to do for a very long time and hadn't found the right story for. So sometimes it just takes shape over time of like, oh, I know I want to do a story with a character who has this superpower, but it isn't until the other pieces start to come together that I realize, oh, this is probably about a young person. Mm-hmm. And so if it's about a young person, does that mean that it's a young adult novel? Does that mean that it's a novel for grown-ups with a teenage protagonist? Most of that is just a me decision, and then I'll send it to my agent, and my agent will try to sell it. Or I'll talk it over with my agent to be like, is this a terrible idea? And then he'll tell me if it's a terrible idea. Although my agent is amazing, and he's never told me I have a terrible idea. And he usually encourages me to write what I want to write, even if it sounds terrible, because usually it ends up being okay, I hope. As long as you write what you're excited about and passionate about, I think the rest can sort of be figured out on the fly. Hmm. I got a question for you guys.
Ooh. Okay.
What good books have you read lately?
Right now I'm reading One of Us is Lying.
Oh, how is it?
It's pretty good.
Awesome. I haven't read it yet.
It's a murder mystery.
Yeah.
It's pretty fun. We have that for Battle of the Books this year.
Oh,
one
nice.
Of our five books that the teens are reading.
That's great.
And it wasn't my favorite book I ever read, but I definitely was. That was another one I listened to. And I think I listened to it almost all in one go just because I wanted to know how it ended. I wanted to know if I was right in my guesses. And so it was really effective in that way in the suspense. And it was a fun read. What have I read recently? Well, I'm loving Destroy All Monsters.
Awesome.
So that's great. I just read, I always forget the title, but you might know it because it's also young adult speculative fiction. They Both Die in the End.
Yeah, by Adam Silvera.
By Adam Silvera. Yeah. I liked that a lot.
That's a great one.
And The Very Large Expanse of Sea by Tahereh Mafi.
Oh, that one I
do. Was great. That one's not speculative fiction.
But that's okay.
It's okay.
We can still hang out with them.
Yeah.
Those kids are cool too. They go to another school, but it's cool. We get along. We don't have a rivalry.
What are some of the books that you've read recently that you've enjoyed?
I just read a book called A Place for Us by Fatima Farhir Mirza, mm-hmm. which is not young adult and is not genre. I usually only read science fiction, fantasy, and horror, but every once in a while, I'll find myself in a strange, unfamiliar place where there's no magic or monsters or dinosaurs or spaceships or robots. And that's cool, too. and this is a beautiful book. It's about an Indian Muslim immigrant family in California and really beautifully written, really great story. And I am a big fan of Ursula Le Guin, mm-hmm. but I had only read her science fiction novels, like The Left Hand of Darkness. And so she has a fantasy series about Earthsea.
Yay.
And so I had never read those. And, you know, I don't really like... this is the problematic narrative I have in my head, which is that I don't like secondary world fantasy or, like, mm-hmm. sort of epic Lord of the Rings style fantasy, but that's just because I don't like Lord of the Rings. It's not because I don't like that genre. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of times that genre is just trying to replicate the Lord of the Rings for people who just want to keep reading the Lord of the Rings over and over again, and that's cool for them, but that's not my thing. So I have in my head that I don't like that genre, so I often steer clear of it, but then I read something like Ursula Le Guin's Earthsea books, and I'm like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. I love this. So those books are beautiful. I very rarely read a series together. I'll like read one book and then read something else and then go back. But this one, I'm just reading them one after the other because mm-hmm. they're so good. So that's very exciting.
My mom will be happy to know that there's another person in the world that isn't a fan of Lord of the Rings besides
her,
because she's surrounded by a family of people who love Lord of the Rings, and we always like tease her, like, Mom, you want to watch your favorite movie?
I'm sorry.
Here it is.
I'm sorry I insulted the Lord of the Rings.
It's fine. Mashuda's here.
We're just joined by the wonderful Mashuda.
Yay. Nice to see you again.
Hello. My name is Mashuda, and I am 17 years old, and I'm from Hudson.
Yay.
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 So we were just talking about, Sam had asked us what books we'd read recently that we liked, and then we turned it back on him. He's recently reading Earthsea, which I read the first two, Wizard of Earthsea and Tombs of Atuan, which I'm not sure if I say that name right, but that's how I say it. And I still have to read Farthest Shore, and I think there's some other books set in that world. I really liked Wizard of Earthsea a lot, and then I loved Tombs of Atuan, and then I just somehow never made it to the third, and so now I'm at a point where it's been so long that I'm like, should I reread the first two before I go in? I don't know.
That's such a frustrating point to be in with any series. Yeah, just like, oh, I don't remember.
Yeah, I read a book that I'm not going to name, and I didn't love it. I didn't hate it, but I stopped reading halfway through because I got distracted with other books, and then the book got picked for my book club, which means I'm probably going to have to start over and read it again because I don't remember it enough to just pick up where I left off. So these are not major problems, you know, having to read a book.
On a book show, it's a major struggle for us, especially with I read a lot of comics, but I read them in volume form.
Right.
So I only read them once or twice a year, depending on how quickly they put out the volumes.
Right.
And sometimes every time I get a new one, I'm like, do I remember what happened last time? And you really want to have that last season on.
Yeah.
But they don't always do that.
No. I love the way they do it on television shows. They show you only what's going to happen in that episode. You know, it's like they're not going to give you the whole backstory. They're just going to be like, remember this person whose father died?
That might be relevant to this episode.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They need to do that for books.
They need
series.
Like a recap thing, you know, in the same style of Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Yeah. What comics have you read lately that are amazing?
Well, one I just recently read the first volume of, and I have the second volume at home, so I haven't started it yet, is Skyward, which I thought was really fun. That one got nominated for an Eisner this year. And I love Black Hammer and Paper Girls. I've been enjoying the new Runaways. Awesome. I liked the old Runaways, at least the earlier ones, and then they just re-released that with Rainbow Rowell working on them, so those are fun. I think those are my main ones. I still read Walking Dead, although I'm less invested than I once was, and Saga I know is taking a break now, but I loved that series.
Saga's so good.
Yeah.
Saga is like my go-to if I meet someone who's into comics and isn't sure about graphic novels or wants to get into comics or graphic novels. That's always my, like, read Saga. That's the gateway drug.
In a good way.
I always go back to read Nimona, even though it was several years ago when I first read it.
Is that a Netflix show now?
No.
No, but Noelle Stevenson, the one who worked on Nimona, is working on the reboot of She-Ra, Princess of Power.
See. That's why I have that in my head.
So,
that's
yeah,
the Netflix connection.
Yeah, so she is on that. I tried watching that. It was okay.
I was like,
Noelle Stevenson's on it. I need to at least see a few episodes, the first season at least.
Yeah.
I do love the Hilda series, though, which did become a Netflix series. But I like the comics more. The show's good, too. I mean, it's geared for kids, so I'm sure kids would love it. But
awesome.
The comics are really creative and fun. And they're large scale. They're, like, big.
Nice.
Big books.
Excellent.
Which is fun.
I'm reading the Legend of Korra comics from Dark Horse, which are really good. And I don't know if any of y'all watched Legend of Korra.
I know how it ends. Okay. I know a bit about it.
So it ends with the main character, Korra, who's the Avatar, she and her really close friend, Asami, who's also a girl, realize that they're in love with each other. And that's the end of the show. And then the comic book picks up with them sort of going on vacation together and going on adventures together, but as a couple. So it's brilliant. It's a great comic, and it's a great show.
Everyone basically read comics, and I feel like I'm the only one that don't. So, like, I really should start. Like,
no pressure. It's just like regular books. That's cool, too. There's good comics, though.
Yeah.
What books have you read lately that you like?
I haven't read anything lately, but I'm still reading The Hate U Give.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
I love that one.
That's one of our battle books this year.
Yeah.
Oh, nice. So, One of Us is Lying, The Hate U Give.
Six of Crows is another one.
Good
that one was really good.
Yep.
Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe.
I hear good things about that one.
That's my favorite.
And Darkest Part of the Forest?
Yes,
the Holly
I think
Black.
That is.
Oh,
it is.
I love Holly Black.
Yeah, that one's really good. That was the only one I hadn't read at the time that the books were selected, and it sound like a book for me, but I really loved it.
She's a great writer.
Yeah.
She tells stories really brilliantly.
It shared something in common with your books that I really love about fantasy and speculative fiction, is that I really love when there is a sort of contemporary fiction aspect, or it's sort of like the world that we live in, but a little bit different. That really works well for me as a reader.
Awesome.
Especially with a book like Destroy All Monsters, where there is one section, one story that's much more contemporary fiction. It may have some elements that would fall into speculative fiction. And then one side is super fantasy oriented. I think it really works well for readers that maybe are trying out a genre that they're not as used to reading. So whether they really read fantasy and it's giving them a taste of contemporary fiction, or vice versa.
That's my hope.
They get to dip their toes in fantasy.
That's my hope.
Yeah.
The other possible scenario is that people who like fantasy and people who like gritty contemporary will both hate it. I'm hopeful that's not what happens.
Yeah,
my goal is to sort of hook people from either side, because I like both. I think lots of people like both, but lots of times people just read one and not the other, and that's cool if that's your thing, but it's also sometimes fun to find other stuff. And you know, Holly Black was my Clarion teacher.
She was
my instructor at the Clarion Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers Workshop, so it is very understandable. I know I learned a lot from her, and I'm sure there's things that she does that I am also doing. I mean, for me, there's so many things that make me really angry about the world we live in, or that make me upset or sad or scared or hopeful. And so science fiction and fantasy, usually when I'm writing them, it's a way to talk about the things that I have strong opinions about in the world, but to talk about them in a slightly different way. Like, I want to talk about power and oppression and how people are hurt by the systems that we live in, and how would that be different if there was magic? You know? So it's a fun way to sort of say what you feel about the world, but say it in a different way with hopefully monsters and fun and magic and adventure.
Well, I know this week Sam and Amelia are both hanging out at the library.
Yeah.
For a sci-fi writing workshop that Sam is offering. So I'm curious what suggestions you would have for people that are looking to start out writing sci-fi.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot, of how do I talk to younger writers. You know, I've been studying writing so long, and I've read so many books and had so many teachers, and, you know, I've absorbed so much information, and what's the most important thing, or what is the sort of bottom line I'd say to someone? And I think that the most important thing is just have fun, you know, write about the things that give you joy. And that can be serious stuff. It doesn't mean it's all got to be fun and games, but it's really, for me, about, you know, you should do things that you enjoy. And a lot of times you can tell when a writer is writing something that they're bored, or that they think it's very serious and they're taking it very seriously and they're not having any fun. You know, I think that a lot of young writers, they start out writing because they're readers and they love a book, and maybe they start writing fanfic, or they want to sort of try to do something similar to what other writers have done that they love. And I think that's really important. And I think people should, in order to figure out who you are as a writer, sometimes that means experimenting with trying to be other writers, that you don't want to be exactly like someone else. But if you want to try writing out the style of Holly Black or J.K. Rowling or Stephen King or whoever, to figure out what your voice is and sort of like combine all those different pieces, I think that's really important. It's very easy to take writing too seriously and to think of it as like, I'm a tortured poet with tortured poet things to say.
I wish I was wearing my Edgar Allan Poe shirt when you said that.
Exactly.
I thought about wearing it today.
Edgar Allan Poe is cool. I like him. But it's okay to be a tortured poet, but it's also okay to be like a fan person who just really loves stuff and wants to geek out about it. Yeah, some of the participants in the workshop are like, they're really into Spider-Man. Spider-Man's not one of my favorite superheroes, but they're really into it. And they have a lot of like really interesting opinions and thoughts about Spider-Man and the Avengers. And so that's cool. Like, if the Avengers gets you excited and makes you want to tell stories or argue about stories about, no, that's not why they did that. They did it because of this or whatever. Whatever, that's cool. Like, it should just be something where you're having fun.
I know some of those kids are also like really into Star Wars too, which fits for a sci-fi writing class.
Yeah, and there's a lot to learn from Star Wars. There's a lot to learn from all these things, and even if some of it you might, I don't want to say outgrow, but people change over time what they love and what they respond to. And so sometimes you like love a book and then you come back to it 5 years later or 10 or 20 and you're like, this is terrible. Or you hate a book and you come back to it 5 or 10 or 20 years later and you're like, wow, this is amazing. What was wrong with me? That's the fun part about getting old. It's like the consolation prize for becoming an old person is that you can go back and see how you've changed because the books stay the same, but your experience of it is totally different.
I have a question. So, like, I'm very amazed by the fact that, like, authors like you, and they can write so much chapters per chapter. Like, when I write my school essays, I'm like, I have very trouble finishing the pages because I know what I want to say, but I don't have, you know, the keyword to make it more, you know, sound amazing. So, like, how do you do that? Like, how do you...
Well, I think part of it goes back to what I was just saying about having fun. You're probably not having fun when you're writing those school essays. If you were having fun, they'd zip by. If you were writing about something that brought you a lot of joy and made you really happy, I'm sure you've noticed that it's easier to write an essay about something you're interested in than something you're not interested in. So being into it and having fun is an important part of it. And another part of it is just practice. Because when I was younger, I didn't, like you said, like finding the right words. That's, I mean, that's literally the description of a writer's job, is finding the right words. And that's very hard. And like any job, you're not born with it. You have to learn it. You have to figure it out. And so figuring out how to communicate things of like, well, this character is sad in this chapter. How am I going to make them sad? Like, how do I communicate that they're sad without just saying they're sad? Which you can say that, but in order to make it come alive for people, you should be able to, like, say it in a way that feels fresh and vivid. So a lot of it is just practice of trying
looking up
things.
Synonyms online is your friend, especially if it's a long page paper and you need bigger words to get that one last page in there.
Absolutely. The thesaurus is your friend.
Yeah, I was thinking of also, like, be sitting across from you and be like, Sam looks really sad. You don't have to tell me you're sad. You don't have to say, I'm sad.
Right.
But, like, what is it about Sam that's making me think he's sad? Is it the way he's talking, the way he's holding himself, facial expression?
Yep.
Is a giant tear rolling down his face? You know, there's different ways that if you can kind of visualize it, I think that can help develop
details.
Some of it.
Details help, and sensory details. And here's a hack. Here's a trick. Smell is the most evocative sense. So if you describe a smell, it evokes a lot more memory than if you describe a sight or a sound or something like that, or a taste. So describing a smell, readers can imagine a smell much more vividly than they can imagine a sight or a sound or a taste or a feeling. So I have a lot of smells in my books.
I'll be keeping an eye out for that the rest of Destroy All Monsters.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we're just about out of time today.
I was just getting started.
Yeah.
Well, we can always have you back, Sam.
Anytime.
You're welcome anytime. But thank you so much for coming. Thanks for doing the workshop at the library. The kids were all really excited today.
Both have been super fun.
And I hope everyone out there listening will check out Sam's books. The most recent is Destroy All Monsters, which is on shelves now, and Blackfish City and The Art of Starving.
And stay tuned. There might be a Hudson event for Destroy All Monsters.
I had
a reading at the library for Art of Starving that was super fun. So I might do something like that for Destroy All Monsters.
Yeah, come on back. We'll let our listeners know.
Awesome.
Once we have that date, hopefully set. But yeah, definitely check out the books. I have not finished Destroy All Monsters yet, but The Art of Starving and Blackfish City were two of my favorite books that I've read in recent years, and this one so far is one of my favorite books I've read this year, and I'm not just saying that because you're here.
Awesome. I truly mean it.
And yeah, so we'll be back next week to talk about some more books.
Yay, books.
Thanks everyone for listening. Hope you have a good week with lots of quality reading time. Happy reading.
Bye.
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 Now we're joined by Christina Hunt Wood from the group called Fair for All. Christina, are you there?
I am here. How are you?
I'm doing well this morning. How about you?
Doing all right.
So tell us, what is Fair for All, with this group you've started in Delaware County?
Okay, so Fair for All is a group of very concerned local folks from Delaware County who basically individually we were addressing the increase of Confederate flags in our communities, but also at the county fair. And in 2015, after the Charleston shooting, the church massacre, there was a lot of protesting in the streets in South Carolina, the removal of the Confederate flag from the State House. Many communities, Amazon, Walmart, stopped allowing the sale of this item because of its, you know, very dark history and sort of like the resurgence of that sentiment. So as individuals, a few people, you know, had never met before, had been writing letters or working on art projects or whatever it was, and then kind of satellites out in the world doing our own thing. And then in 2016, we were at a completely unrelated meeting, met, and realized that we had all been working on the same project to try to get the county fair to remove the Confederate flag from, you know, vendors, from being allowed to be sold by the vendors.
go ahead.
I'm sorry, what?
No, go ahead.
So we then just decided that we were going to organize a press conference and meet outside the fair and just kind of, we delivered a letter with over 600 signatures from community members, and we and had some speakers talk about the impact of that symbol on our communities, on our culture. And we were met with a lot of hostility from the fair organizers who, came up to us in golf carts and tried to have us arrested. But we continued with the press conference, and that was kind of the beginning of everything. So over the past, that was 2016. And so over the past couple of years, we've just continued that conversation, not letting it go. Delaware County Fair has not, they did create a policy, but it's a very, basically they're stating that they will not allow the display of flags at vendor tents, but they will allow the sale of it. You know, what does that mean? It's, you know, a little bit of a nod to us, a little bit of a win, I guess, if you're going to look at it that way. But for us, we're like, you know, but you're still allowing people to benefit from overtly racist materials at a family-friendly event. Doesn't seem like it's the right thing to do.
So they would be allowed to have like a cardboard box that has scrawled on it on the sides, Confederate flags inside?
Yes, exactly. So they could do that. Or maybe they would just be like, hey, you look like you might want a Confederate flag, but but yeah, so it really doesn't solve the problem at all. You know, they have a right as a private entity to, you know, ban any kind of merchandise they don't want to be sold at that event. I mean, I used to be an event planner, you know, ran festivals and stuff like that. And it's not like, you know, the vendors told me what they were going to, you know, that, like, you know, I had some say with what kind of vendors I would want at a festival. And they have that same power, but they're choosing to, you know, kind of side with. Interestingly, I think there are a lot of people in this community that would like these flags to go away. You know, they don't want it at a family-friendly event. There's no reason for it. Those politics don't belong there. But they're siding with these vendors who are often not even from our community, allowing them to make this money off of this racist merchandise. And we have a very, it's a predominantly white community. And so there is a little bit of, I think, detachment from the realities of what the Confederate flag symbol might mean to people of color. I am a person of color. I have seen the use of the symbol throughout my life because I grew up in this area, but it has increased. It has, you know, there's been increased violence along with that symbol. And at the fair, it just, you know, it just was like, this is it. And I kind of, you know, in 2015, along with many other people, had that snapping moment of like, this is it, enough. But, yeah.
And you did see more of this stuff, not just at the fairs, but locally.
Yes.
In 2016, you were saying?
Like 2015. And 2016 was, you know.
So that seems to imply that it was tied to the presidential election?
Yes. And I would actually, I mean, I'm a visual artist, and I had gone around documenting a lot of the vendor tents that year. And, you know, where you saw a lot of Confederate flags, you also saw Make America Great hats and, you know, and other kinds of Trump paraphernalia. So it was very related to the election.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw last night the president had a, I guess, announcing his reelection campaign. And there was a pretty large group of people flashing white power symbols, like marching to the event at one point I saw on television.
Yeah. And I didn't see it, and I'm not surprised. And it's a very disturbing direction that I think that we're going in. And, you know, I believe at these, you know, so-called family-friendly events, you know, they, you know, to normalize it is just the wrong decision. It just allows for that space to be open to white supremacists and, you know, welcoming to them and not welcoming to people of color. You know, there's a documentary, I can't even remember the name of it, but that I watched a while back that was about the Ku Klux Klan in North Carolina and just sort of the rise of that after sort of the Mayberry days and how North Carolina became the number one, like, the home of the Ku Klux Klan. And they would have these events, and they would, like, have rides, and they would have animals and people doing performances, and they would have a cross-burning afterwards. And I'm just like, oh, my God, are we going in that direction? Like, you know, it's a little bit, it's jarring. And it's, and, you know, and they used all of these other, you know, these other elements to sort of bring people together and then to sort of, like, also, you know, convey this message of white supremacy.
Yeah,
so I hate seeing that happen in my backyard and in any, you know, community.
If you take out the racist symbolism in the flag, it's just odd that an American and someone who's like at a campaign that's supposed to be like all very much American is backing a symbol of being a traitor to the country,
right?
Which is just very, very odd that they've turned that around. It doesn't even seem to be in the discussion that it's a traitorous symbol and it's about overthrowing the country.
Right, right. And I, you know, it's interesting because I just don't think that. I mean, when you put it all together, none of it makes sense, and it just feels like, you know, attracting whoever, you know, attracting anger from whatever. From whatever direction you can, and then just sort of trying to radicalize it or something. I don't know, you know, because the campaign certainly is very un-American, and they do present themselves as being, you know, super patriotic and But I mean, how many times do you see, I mean, I don't know if you see this, but I see this, where you have like, don't tread on me, a Confederate flag, an American flag, you know, all on the same wall or on the same truck for that matter. And it just is such a, it just is like so contradicting. But it's also a testament to like what we're not learning in our history books, like really like the nitty gritty of what we're not learning in history. And that, you know, that you can mishmash all of these things and that we don't talk about like visual language and we don't talk about, I don't think there's a real focus on critical thinking at times. So you've got people who are just not able to even, or willing, to sort of step outside of like some very narrow view and say, okay, what does this mean for like, you know, a bigger picture and how does this connect to other things that aren't just my like personal, you know, this like body. So,
and,
you know,
I don't know if you saw, I think Frontline on PBS had a documentary recently about the rise of sort of these right-wing extremists, and you know, we've seen all kinds of shootings, the California shooting, the Pittsburgh synagogue
right.
shooting, how they're tied to guns and in the military, and there's just sort of like this underground army of
right.
white supremacists throughout the country that is not talked about. They're not talked about as terrorists when
right.
they shoot up a synagogue. You know,
right.
it's I would think it's a scary time to be an African American in Delaware County.
It is, and you know, I mean, I'm originally from this area, not specifically like right where I am, but there's always been racism. There's always been a certain mentality. I feel like, you know, I'm from here. I'm a local girl. Am I like intimidated by being in this space at this moment? Yeah, a bit. Like, I think that there is an increased hostility. I think that, you know, we Delaware County apparently has one of the highest gun violence rates in, you know, per capita in the state, you know. And, you know, if I wasn't a little bit, I'm kind of like a confrontational person in some ways, you know, where if I can't live my whole life, my authentic life, I will push back, you know. Not everybody's wired like me. And I know of people who have grown up here as people of color and who have left because they don't feel safe, because they don't feel like it's a place they could raise a family without their child being, you know, abused for the color of their skin. I think that if I was I don't know. I'm a different kind of person, maybe. And I say that in like a, I just push back and I feel really committed to this space as like my space. And as a person of color who's grown up here, I've never felt like I've been really seen as a local person. And so that just kind of like fires me up and makes me want to like, you know, have that conversation more and more. You know, when people see me, they basically say, oh, when'd you move up from the city? You know, and I'm like, mm-hmm. from here. you know, so there's this just assumption of otherness that, you know, I just feel like it needs to be pushed against so people realize that, you know, there is a space for people of color, people who are not just white Protestants. I think I kind of digressed there.
Yeah, are local politicians speaking up on this issue one way or the other?
You know, we've got a lot of support from the Democratic Committee. They have helped, you know, gather signatures. They have, you know, they've spoken out against the issues. I think a lot of people try to just stay out of it. They don't want to, you know, be in the limelight. You know, they just don't want to talk about it. But the Democratic Committee has absolutely been supportive.
And how big of an issue is this at other county fairs or the state fair?
At the state fair, apparently there is a policy that is basically, you know, disallowing the sale of Confederate merchandise. People say, you know, we get word from people that say they see it being sold by vendors and that they're just kind of ignoring that policy. I don't know how prevalent that is. I haven't seen it with my eyes. And, you know, that's the same for, I know that Otsego County over by Oneonta, you know, they had a policy, I think, in 2015, but then the next year there were, like, flags everywhere. So they just completely ignored that policy. And the policy is often something wishy-washy in some of the smaller fairs, like, you know, hiding the flag as opposed to actually banning the sale. And, you know, we, like, I know that we've reached out to all of the county fairs, and we haven't heard from everyone. A lot of people did not respond, but we, you know, I think in your area, your Ulster County, that there isn't a policy necessarily, or there might be a policy, but the flags are very prevalent. I know that.
I think there were several media reports in the past years that there were at the Ulster County Fair. Yeah.
Yeah. And Dutchess County is near you. Is this correct?
Yes.
Okay. So Dutchess County, you know, there's a claim that there are no sales of the Confederate flag, but we never received any sort of response when we reached out. And, you know, we are trying to keep a database of who has a policy, who's, you know, keeping up with that policy. We're reaching out to everybody. Nobody wants to talk to us. some people do. Actually, I'm going to give, you know, we have 9 people on our list that we spoke to directly, you know, 9 fairs that have policies, some that spoke to us don't have policies. But, you know, most recently, you know, Washington County, I think, you know, Trumansburg Fair and the governor in St. Lawrence most recently that passed policies to ban the sale of Confederate flags.
And are there, I'm guessing there are... some of these fairs don't want to take action because they're afraid of lawsuits, and it seems like there's a free speech case to be made that that the flags should be allowed to be for sale.
Sure. Well, our opinion on this is that we're not telling anybody they can't wear the symbol. You know, free speech is, you know, for the individuals. They are a private entity. They have the right to sell or not sell whatever they don't want to sell. And as a, you know, as a community, as community leaders, they should, you know, morally do the right thing by not allowing the sale of hate, like hateful symbols. You know, they do, or things that are like really controversial. So, you know, for us in Delaware County, they don't allow the sale of sex toys, for example, or alcohol at the fair at all. And, you know, they make a decision. That's a decision, a policy that they created. And we would like them to treat this, you know, racism, systemic racism, the same way that they treat these other things. You know, they have the right. So we're not taking away people's right to be themselves and to say what they need, but I think that, you know, when you're getting state funding, which is like, you know, it may not be a huge amount of money, but I know that $5 million goes to the fairs for infrastructure, you know, through grants. If you're getting state funding, I don't think that it should be used, your space should be used for, you know, the sale of segregationist, you know, material that's like excluding non-white people. They have the right. They're a private entity that also receives state funding. They have all these things kind of that they can do it. I mean, if Amazon can do it, they can do it. If you know, Walmart can do it, they can do it.
Yeah, we're a nonprofit educational radio station that gets state and national grant funding, and we have a policy against hate speech on the radio. So.
Sure. Exactly. And I think that I was just reading an article about the governor in St. Lawrence County Fair, and there was a comment from a representative from Ag and Markets. And she had said, you know, they can't change the grant funding, you know, that they've already allocated. Obviously, they can't take away funding, but they're looking into ways to sort of address, you know, how do you manage the kind, like, how do you manage the fairs that you're funding through that, the grant regulations, so that they're not able to just, you know, create an unwelcoming atmosphere for certain groups.
And we're speaking to Christina Hunt Wood from the group Fair for All, based in Delaware County. Do you want to give us your websites or ways to get in contact?
You can visit our website at www.fairforallny.org.
And do you urge people to, if people want to take action on this, what is the best course of action?
They can visit the website, and there is a contact sheet, also like a, you know, subscribe to our e-blast list, and that's a good place to start, because we send out periodic notices, calls to action. We also will list events as they come on, and there is a spreadsheet where you can like search for your own fair and see if we've, you know, have information about their policies and stuff like that, so, and contact information, so they can actually go there and get the phone number or the email address for their county fair reps, and just take action individually.
And do you think people should, if they're at the fair and they see something like this, should they say something to the person selling it, or to the find the fair office, or?
We feel that, you know, it's really about the leadership, and that, you know, if dropping a letter off or sending an email is great, or stopping in the office and just saying, you know, it, you know, expressing if you're offended, you know, or if it, you know, speaking up the way that you're most comfortable. You know, we are going to also be trying to put together a team of folks to sort of just go to the fairs and just take a look and, you know, communicate with each other. So if people want to get involved with that, they can reach out to the website and through the website and let us know that they would like to kind of cover their own fair, just to give us a heads up of, like, you know, what kind of environment is.
Yes, it's just about to be fair season, isn't it?
It is. It's coming on quick.
All right, is there anything else our listeners should know about this issue?
I don't think so. I mean, there's plenty more. But I think I covered a lot of information, probably more than, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for telling us all about this issue, especially as the like we said, the fairs are about to start. There's the Greene County Youth Fair, I believe, where we are, has in the past had some of these items for sale. I don't know if they have a policy. Do you include the youth fair? That's sort of the county fair.
They
here.
Are on the list. Yeah. It says no policy.
No policy, yeah. I think they have refused to comment on the issue, as I remember, but maybe
and
I'm
that
wrong.
Is, that's another interesting thing, because there are several of these organizations that are also affiliated with the Cornell Cooperative Extension, and that is one of them. And, you know, we have also been having conversations. I know this is like a whole other piece of the conversation, but conversations with Cornell and the Cooperative Extension about partnering with fairs that feel so comfortable allowing the sale of this kind of merchandise.
Yeah, the Cornell Cooperative Office is just a quarter mile down the road from where I am right now, and is a very important part of this, our listening area, the Greene and Columbia County. So that's another organization you could contact about this, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Christina Hunt Wood, for talking to us today. And again, what's the website if people want more information?
www.fairforallny.org.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us today.
It's WGXC 90.7 FM.
Right.
Acra.
Keep going.
Hudson, Catskill, Phoenicia, and lots of other places.
That's an interesting addition.
And Valencia.
And
or
Valencia.
As they usually call it when you first land in Columbia County.
Valati. Very well done. Did you mention the online way to
use? And online at WGXC.org.
Yes.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the Science of Aesthetics Laser and Med Spa, offering a wide variety of multifaceted cosmetic services at 810 Union Street in Hudson. Consultations are available. Information at 518-697-5390 and scienceofaesthetics.net.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cornelius Eady of New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Find some old forgotten words or ancient man.